Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the afternoon session of the City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Saltzman? Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Okay, we have a single item on the council calendar this afternoon, item 870. Would you read that, please, Carla? Mm-hmm.
Amend contract with Rosenbaum and Watson LLP in the amount of $458,000 per year for a five-year total not to exceed amount of $2,243,834 for the independent compliance officer and community liaison for the Department of Justice settlement agreement.
Okay, we have three people here to present this item to us, Deanna West-Mitchell, Judy Prosper, and Kathleen Sadat. Please come up together.
Oh, I should probably be over there because I have a PowerPoint.
Oh.
Oh, she's got a PowerPoint. I'll move. I'm sorry.
Musical chairs.
Okay, I'm staying here.
Sorry. This is what it's been like all day for me.
I'm sorry.
All right.
We got the computers over here.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Whoever's going to kick
Thank
this
you.
Off.
I will.
You, Deanna? Thank you.
Yep. I'm Deanna Weston-Mitchell. I work in Mayor Charlie Hills' office, and I'm the project manager for the city for the citywide portion, I guess, of the DOJ, implementing the DOJ settlement agreement. Mostly that covers work, the city's responsibilities with the COCL, which is the Compliance Officer Community Liaison Team, and the COAB. So I kind of coordinate from the city's perspective and coordinate with the other council offices.
Back, can we bring the volume up a little bit?
Oh, I'm sorry. Back in January of this year, we were before council to get the contract approved with the Compliance Officer Community Liaison Team, and that was done. We hired Rosenbaum Watson LLP out of Chicago. The team has had some changes over the last 7 months, 8 months, and that's part of what we're here to talk to you about today. Judy will talk about the different amendments to the contract so far. Oh, wait, that's the wrong one. Sorry. It should say COCL, a folder on COCL changes. Sorry. Judy from the city attorney's office will discuss different amendments to the contract so far, and then Kathleen Sadat, who is the new community liaison portion of the COCL team, will actually talk about the work that the COCL team is doing. So I just wanted to start off because it was requested when we did the January budget, and $725,000 annually was put into the 2015-16 budget for the COCL work. Of that, $240,000 was originally for the COCL contract, $380,000 was for the for administrative costs, and we were asked, I believe it was Commissioner Fish, who asked, what is that going to cover specifically? And we honestly did not know at that point. And we said that we would come back and more fully explain what the administrative costs of the COCL and COAB are. So that's what we'll... Thank you. So that's what we're going to do today. And what do I do to make it show up there? Sorry.
Stand by.
Sorry.
There we go.
So this was all in the public council documents that went out. The administrative costs so far for the COCL, for the overall kind of administrative things, we've got general areas here, which include the translation services, which are needed at each meeting, audiovisual recordings, which are also needed. It is each COAB monthly meeting, and the public hearings are all aired on PCI, and then the video link is at the website also, so people can see it. The community policing survey, which was a requirement for in the settlement agreement, that cost is estimated about $72,500. It's increased from what the original cost was with Portland State. We switched to DHM. I can't remember what DHM stands for. We switched to DHM. The COAB did a lot of work in trying to find a different company who would do the survey on community policing services.
Davis Hibbett's firm?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which item are you talking about right now?
Oh, I'm just going down the list. The external materials and services, they fall into the kind of big buckets of translation services, which are about $21,000 a year budgeted.
Yeah, okay. And I didn't see the DHM reference, but you're just referring to them.
Okay. The community policing survey, which is required in the contract for to be able to measure if the community believes that services have improved. The additional professional services, which include office supplies, repair, maintenance, minor equipment for the office, and then the lease, which was estimated at $18,000. Right now, it is $6,000 for the space that they have in the Office of Equity and Human Rights, $6,000 a year. However, DOJ is requiring a locked office, and so we are looking at making either a build-out in that space or moving to a new office location that will provide a locked office for the COCAL team. That just came up a little bit ago. And then internal materials and services are about $11,500. Again, those are kind of standard costs for the computers, internet access, phones, et cetera. The position that is agreed to in the settlement agreement is the assistant program specialist, who that person is actually housed out of the Office of Equity and Human Rights now. So that budget has been moved to their annual budget out of the mayor's office. Including benefits, that was about $90,000. So the total administrative, including that position, is about $240,000. The council budgeted originally $380,000 for administrative costs. We did not know what that cost would be. We didn't know if there would be any new challenges or new costs, expenses that came up. And so we asked for more money to start with. The thing that has had the greatest increase is the work that is expected from the COCAL team. And I think Judy will be ready to talk about kind of how the contract has changed over the last few months, unless you guys have some questions about the administrative budget.
Okay, questions so far?
So the $90,000 for the assistant program specialist in the Office of Equity and Human Rights?
Yes.
Was a position previously in the mayor's office?
No, it did not exist. In the settlement agreement, we agreed to provide them with administrative support when talking with the Bureau of Human Resources. The COCAL team, sorry.
Okay.
So the city agreed to provide the COCAL team with administrative support person, and through the conversations with BHR as to what that person would need to do, including the community engagement, the job description that BHR said most fit was an assistant program specialist. And so the city created an assistant program specialist position, and then it was housed in the Office of Equity and Human Rights because we didn't want it to be housed in the mayor's office.
Okay. So I don't know, maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but I guess what you described to me sounds like sort of like a position that of program manager that Amy Ruiz is doing. So,
and
how's that different, I guess?
Kathleen will, or Mrs. Sadat will be able to explain more detail about how the project manager is different from the assistant program specialist, who also does the administrative work with their billing, contracts, invoices, along with community engagement and outreach work.
And we approve that in the budget. The 90,000 position in OEHR.
And so with the remaining from that originally 380,000 that was budgeted, the unknown costs yet are going to be if there's an office build out or if we have to move them to a different space to get that locking door private office, which is required by DOJ. And the focus groups, which the COAB has identified to really hear from houseless communities, youth, the LGBTQ communities who might not necessarily be reached in the DOJ-required mailing survey to home addresses. So those focus groups, that's part of the increase in the COAB budget, which isn't really part of the contract conversation, but we are increasing the COAB budget through the admin funds. Part of it is advertising, which what had been in the advertising, which had been in the administrative budget already. The COAB will be in control of advertising for the COAB, which makes sense. And then they want to do focus groups for specific underrepresented parties. They're estimating approximately $5,000 for that. We don't know if it's probably going to cost more. So that hasn't been completely fleshed out. And I say all that to say I will probably be back for a fall bump request regarding specifically the focus groups and specifically the office build-out if that's needed. There could be some cost savings. The $75,000 that you all approved for travel back in January, so far they've only requested $23,000 this year to date. So there will be some savings in that $75,000 not to exceed amount. So that may be able to be used for the office build out. I'm doing all I can to keep it under that $725,000 that was originally budgeted by council.
The question's for Jana.
So the agreement we have with the Department of Justice focuses on issues the police have with people with mental health problems.
Yes.
Okay. So I guess connect the dots for me how that relates to focus groups with, say, the LGBT community or a numerous variety of groups that we can all sit here and come up with and say, well, we got to do focus groups. How does that tie into the central crux of what we're trying to accomplish with the Department of Justice?
That is an excellent question, and I think Ms. Sadat will be happy to answer that because really that was a request that came from the COAB.
Okay, let's proceed.
You want me to answer it now?
Let's go ahead and proceed through your presentation, and then let's circle back and answer anything that hasn't been addressed. So, Ms. Prosper, are you next, or is Kathleen next?
I believe I am. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. I am Judy Prosper, a Deputy City Attorney for the City of Portland. Together with Deanna, we were before you in January to get the original COCO contract approved. As Deanna mentioned, it was for $240,000 per year, plus $75,000 not to exceed amount for travel expenses. I'll walk you through. So since that time, there have been some amendments. The one before you is proposed amendment number 4, so I'll walk you through to let you know what happened between then and now. Amendment number 1 was necessary. It was just a wording issue because the COCO team began on the 15th of January. We wanted to be able to pay them for half a month rather than a full month. So we had a quick contract amendment to allow for that because there was a fixed amount for an entire month. So that first amendment took place, I think, 2 weeks afterwards in order to pay the first invoice.
Can I just make a standing objection that this is a wonderful chart, but for some of us it's not readable.
Oh.
And the font's getting awfully small in order to cram a lot of information. So if in the future, if it was possible to print it out in a bigger font mm-hmm. and do a handout while you have it on the screen, I would appreciate it.
Will do.
Yeah.
No, so
now I messed it up. Oh, there it is.
Apologies for that. I'm not very thoughtful on our part. So that was the first amendment. The second and third amendments were necessary because we needed an additional DOJ required expert on police practices that was not envisioned in the original contract. In the original contract, there was Jeff Alpert, and he was slated at $5,000, and we added Heather Daniel, who was a different police expert, at $10,000. An additional $30,000 was included in the Second Amendment for the services of Amy Ruiz through 360 Strategies, and she was to serve. Then it was thought for about 6 months to transition between the former community liaison, Justice Paul DeMunez, and Kathleen Sadat, who came on as of June 1st because of his resignation. That increase the contract by $40,000. That amendment was approved by the Chief Procurement Officer, Christine Moody, back around June 1st to accommodate the expert and Amy Ruiz. Today, we're before you for you to consider an additional amendment to the contract to move over from the administrative budget that Deanna just spoke of, the $380,000, the original number of 380. She just spoke to you about using a portion of that, and we would like an additional portion moved over for the costs in the fourth column, and I apologize again for the legibility of it. And those costs would increase by the following. Kathleen Sadat's subcontract amount would increase from the original to Paul DeMunez from $75,000 to $120,000. Amy Ruiz's position would be an ongoing permanent project manager's position, so the amount that you see there is for a full year. Thomas Kristoff, who is the research associate on the team, his salary would increase, as you see there. Jeff Alpert, the original expert, would be doing twice as much work, so going from $5,000 to $10,000. And Heather Daniel.
Sorry. I was trying to make it bigger.
Heather Daniel, the expert added in the June amendment, would go up to $20,000. So from $240,000, the contract increased in June to $280,000, and we are requesting today that you approve it up to $383,000. If you do math well, which I don't, you'll notice a discrepancy. That would bring you over $725,000, and Deanna didn't speak of this, but there was a one-time transfer from the Police Bureau to this budget for the survey, and that's $22,490, which brings us under the $725,000 total COCO budget at $717,827. Questions?
Okay. I have a question. Please. I understand all of those are for increased scope except for Tom Kristoff. His involvement was part of the original bid by Rosenbaum and
Watson,
thank you. It's
no problem.
Past midnight on the time that I was on yesterday. But this, so I don't understand what's changed in the work that he's doing compared with what he was expected to do.
Thanks for that question. I will tell you that I am not a data specialist and I'm not intricately involved in the actual day-to-day work that Tom Kristoff does, but I will sort of read for you a summary of the changes in the job description that the COCL team, Rosenbaum and Watson, provided to us to justify this change. Mr. Tom Kristoff is an integral part of the COCL team who must be retained in the second year of the compliance assessment. In the fall of 2015, Mr. Kristoff will complete his PhD in criminology, law, and justice, at which point his market value will increase significantly. In year two, the COCL team will move him into a leadership position as the manager of all field work and survey work. He will plan field interviews and oversee new and ongoing surveys. He will also oversee the PPB auditing process. As a member of the COCL team, during the first year, Mr. Kristoff evaluated the policies and practices of the Portland Police Bureau and documented efforts to comply with the settlement agreement. He has become very knowledgeable regarding PPB's record system, auditing procedures, employee information system, and ECIT-related services, and has developed good working relationships with people in Portland. Beyond the scope of his original assignment, Mr. Kristoff designed a new auditing system for the PPB to use in reviewing force cases and has been actively involved in assisting the data systems, use of force, and compliance subcommittees of the COAB. His salary is being adjusted to reflect his new doctoral level education and his new responsibilities as the manager of field work and surveys and his oversight of the auditing and records keeping systems at PPB.
Ms. West Mitchell, can you remind me, was it envisioned that he would be staying on after he finished his doctorate?
I think there was hope that he would. I mean, he was part of the team. And
I know he was part of the team,
position.
And so that's what I'm just struggling a little bit with this particular piece, because it.
Well, the data collection work that he leads, right, is ongoing.
Right.
So somebody has to do it, if not him, someone else.
Mm-hmm. I had thought that it was envisioned that he would continue working, and that so therefore I'm not. Right. We knew he was going to be finishing his PhD, so I'm not quite sure why that piece gets changed. But
if I may, I think the PhD piece is probably secondary to the expanded scope of his assignment that they define here, designing the new auditing system and continuing to be actively involved in assisting the data systems use of force and compliance subcommittee. My understanding is that it's sort of a would be akin to a promotion. His job responsibilities are enhanced, and his duties have more responsibility.
Thank you. And I'd be interested to hear when Ms. Sadat gets her turn to see how you envision him working with your team.
So can I just make sure I understand where we are so far? Because the amendment sheet that you've shown us in proposed amendment 4, the contracted services go up, but you stay with under the $725,000 budget because of the other things you've described to us. So I think I understand that, but then how does that relate to the ordinance seeking, where's the $458,000 that's referred to in the ordinance? Is that above and beyond what we're talking about?
No, that includes the $75,000 annual for travel. So the actual contract work will be $383,000, and then there's $75,000 in travel that was approved.
But so as I read the amendments, are we still operating within the framework of a ceiling of $725,000?
Yes.
Yeah, that's why we're at 717 out of 725.
So what you're really walking us through is kind of changing some of the subcomponents, but not increasing the total amount?
Yes.
Mostly it's changing the contract. We need to come before you
to
amend the contract.
Amend the contract. I think if you read the if you just read the ordinance and the introductory paragraph separate from the chart, you might assume that this is new money rather than what I guess you've explained to us is you're proposing to change how the money's allocated, but we're still operating within a $725,000 budget, general fund budget.
Yes,
we're
I probably
should
have.
We're not asking to change the budget yet.
Yes, not asking a change in the budget yet, and I should have moved that up. Thank you for that also. That was the final paragraph of the ordinance and should have moved it up to the top part that it wasn't asking for additional budget money this year. It is still within the $725,000, and I'm going to work to try and keep it there with the office build-out and the focus groups.
So what, since you've given us a preview that we may see you in that chair again at the fall bump, what is the likelihood that you'll come before us? What categories might you be seeking funding, and can you put a kind of a guesstimate on that?
A broad estimate for an office build-out, including furniture, is about $35,000. Depending upon how much is still left in the travel budget for the year at the end, that may be covered in the travel budget, and then the $8,000 kind of left wiggle room under the admin budget. The other option issue will be the focus groups. I don't know how much that's going to actually cost. It was kind of a rough estimate that was given from the COAB. We haven't gotten a full estimate on how much focus groups may cost.
Maybe oversimplify that a little bit. We're talking about tens of thousands of dollars, not hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, you're looking at potentially a 5% increase or something like that.
Yeah.
And so now I at least have the conceptual framework.
Okay.
No, that's helpful. I appreciate that question, Commissioner Fish. So, Judy, are you finished with what you wanted to cover?
I am, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Ms. Sadat, welcome.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. Thank you for
allowing me to be here today. I started this position as community liaison for the COCO in June. I have been very busy ever since. I want to tell you a little bit about the work we're doing, the Community Oversight Advisory Board. I'm responsible for chairing that board. I want to first start by talking about a perception we have about the work that we're doing. I hear again and again that we are rebuilding trust between the police and communities. I would say that I want you to consider the possibility that for some communities, we're not rebuilding trust. The trust never was there. We're starting on the ground. And that does have an impact on how we approach the work, how we talk to people, listening to people, making sure that voices are heard. If we really want to repair or to establish trust with some communities, we have to work really hard at that. I think it's also important that we continuously and repeatedly remind ourselves how big a job this is, how important it is, and its importance in the fact that we are being focused on makes it very, very important for us to do things well. Doing things well with a board of 20 people takes a lot of time. We're being looked at as a potential model for other cities in our country, and we should be very proud of that. At the same time, it means we need to shine, we need to hold this up, and I think I've said this here before, we need to hold this up as important, recognize it as important, that it needs to be in the light. This big job started with the recruitment and selection of volunteers to form the COAB. 20 members, 15 volunteers, people who come and work 10, 15, 20 hours a week instead of the 10 a month that they thought they were coming to work for. And that has to do with the nature of the work, the complexity of it, and the fact that many of these people came on to this group not being informed about the magnitude of the task or the context in which they would be working. Members of the board have varying levels of experience working on a public board. Some are subject matter experts in the area they've chosen, the subcommittee they've chosen to be on. Others are responsible for bringing the voices of the communities into the room so they can be translated into language that allows us to make recommendations to the COCO, to the police bureau, to the city, to the Department of Justice. All appear to be committed to success, but we encounter lots of frustrations. There's been ongoing work to provide our board with the information and tools they need to carry out their charge. In addition to informing them of public meeting law, their role as public officials, and orienting them to the work, a lot of what we've had to do is create structures that didn't exist before, structures for communication, structures for process. We are, as Amy Ruiz says all the time, we are building the plane as we fly it. It wasn't there before. So we didn't walk into an environment where there was a city bureau that we plugged into and all the policies were already there and all the connections were already there. We're forming the connections. We're forming the relationships. We're building the structures that allow us to be clear in our communication. We get complaints about people not knowing things all the time. That means we do more work. Our job is to help the local COCO is what I call us, that's Amy and Mandy and myself, is to help the COAB do its job. We provide administrative support and the four subcommittees, there are now four, and the executive committee. That means minutes, getting them out, getting them posted, etc. Website maintenance, facilitation of relationship building, information gathering, organizing, planning to ensure tasks are completed to meet timelines, coordination with DOJ, the city, the Portland Police Bureau, AMA Coalition, Chicago COCO, other stakeholders, and we respond to the public's inquiries and requests for information. That's a Monday. The work is satisfying on some level because it does, we do have the opportunity to build the structures that allow people in this community to voice their concerns, their opinions, and their recommendations. So it's not just a series of events where people are complaining. They're also trying to solve some problems. And we know that we have to do this working with the police bureau. We have advisors on our committee. They are non-voting. And we've had to work to get them to speak up in the context of our meetings. We have a lot of tension that we're working to overcome between people because they don't trust each other. I could make a list of everybody involved, and there'd be, 80% don't trust the other 80% or 20%. The potential for the impact of this is what attracted me. The wonderfulness of having people feel that they have the power to shape their government and to shape the behavior of the people who police them is just incredibly invaluable. On the question of the subgroups mentioned for focus groups, if you look at the mental health issue and you look at the people who populate that community, you will find within it every one of the groups we named. And as we're advising on the development of policy and or training, it is important to keep that in mind. So being mentally ill doesn't mean that you will be one or the other. You could be both. You could be three. You could be anything in those categories. And it's the belief, thought, and direction that we're taking that says our police officers in policing us need to be aware of that and be prepared to respond to the differences that arise out of those different categories.
So how many subgroups are there?
I don't know. We probably could think up some more. But right now we're looking at people who don't have houses because we can't mail them a survey. We're looking at young members of the gay, lesbian, GLBT community who may be on the streets, who may be gathering at Q Center. We're looking at members of racial and ethnic groups to make sure, since a lot of what happens in terms of complaints about treatment come from the African American and Latino communities, we want to make sure that that voice is there. You got another one you want to add?
Not off the top of my head, but I guess my concern remains, I guess, and I'll wait till you're done, and then I'll say my piece.
I would like to hear your concern.
Well, I'm just afraid it becomes focus groups run amok, and that this budget begins, in fact, to look like a plane being built as it's flying with respect to its budget. Now, I have a lot of respect for you, Ms. Haddad, and I have a lot of respect for Ms. Ruiz, but I just feel that you're working with a group that's a very important group, and we're obviously got a very important agreement with the Department of Justice we have to live up to.
Mm-hmm. My
interest in being the role model, I'm not interested in being the role model if it means just trying to satisfy every conceivable angle under the sun that relates to the crux of the agreement.
The crux
how
of the agreement
police better
is
interact to people with mental health issues. And, I could, you could probably make an argument that police respond to somebody who's a gay or lesbian or bisexual differently with a mental health crisis than somebody who is an ethnic minority. But, I'm not really sure about that. I'm just sort of saying there's probably an argument that could be put forward. And, hey, if we got the focus group budget, why not? What harm does it possibly do?
Well, I guess let's hear from her some more about this. But my sense about this, Commissioner, is that one, that's a relatively minor part of our cost structure. And two, I guess looking at this work on behalf of the police bureau as the commissioner in charge, there are multiple doors into the problem. I think it's good that we try to open each one of those, and a relatively modest expense in reaching out to those different communities by means other than committee meetings have their value,
mm-hmm.
to me is worthwhile. Your point is well made about cost drift in this or any other public involvement enterprise. I believe you're correct to highlight that, but to me a modest investment in careful outreach to different groups, because, you know, we're, to put it a little poetically, we're sort of groping our way into this problem with professional help. I mean, we've got Dr. Rosenbaum and Dr. Watson, and we've got Ms. Sadat, and we've got other resource people that understand this work, but this is the first such venture that I've ever been involved in and that the city's ever been involved in. And so a little extra information from communities that we haven't served well, to me, is worth having. So, again, from sort of a macro view, that's my approach to it. Does the cost matter? Yes.
Well, I'm not going to argue about cost because you guys get to decide that. I'm going to say there is a... there is a piece of this that I hope we don't ignore. If an officer approaches a person that they think they have a mental health problem, it is important for us to notice that those people don't all look, behave, or respond alike. And that some of the behaviors, some of the responses are tied to ethnic background, age, etc. If we hear from these groups as part of the focus group process, maybe we learn something. Maybe we learn we don't really have much of a problem over here, or we've got a bigger problem than we thought over here. So those are my thoughts.
I guess the other thing that you might reflect on a bit, Deanna, is so we're doing this work with the COAB and the COCAL. It also feeds back into training, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we learn
yes.
in the COCAL-COAB process feeds back into training. And we're doing enhanced crisis intervention training for our officers. In fact, I think we've gotten the first of those reports about how that training is working out in the field. Well, is how it's working out, in my opinion. 600 incidents, 49 arrests, one use of force, and that use of force was an officer pointing their gun and directing someone to do something, which they then did. You know, that seems to me positive in terms of the statistics, but what we learn in this process has to feed into training, because that's one of the things that the agreement requires. So to me, again, that's part of why I got enthusiastic about here. We're learning some things. We're changing our training, starting to see some of the positive effects of that different training in everyday life in terms of how our officers are interacting with people. That's not a one-time around the merry-go-round experience.
So I don't know who's going to explain the difference between the assistant program director at the Office of Equity and Ms. Ruiz's position.
Well, I can start on that, and then maybe if I need some help, one of them can help me. Looking at Amy as a program or project manager, does the planning, connects people, helps with meetings. There's a whole list of, I'm not sure what's in here, but a whole list of things that Amy does, and they often look like this. We have a draft of the plan for, she'll be overseeing the draft, the implementation of the planning process between the COAB and the Portland Police Department on the development of the plan for the police department to engage in community engagement. That is one very, very large piece that needs a lot of attention and will take a lot of work to get done. If I talk about Mandy is, she's connecting with people. helping to connect people, but she's doing a lot of the administrative part, the part of posting on the web, the part of listening to people. The part of meeting with people, I think, will come very shortly, but she's only been there like a month, a little over a month. And she's trying to learn all the systems that we have and the ones that we need. She's arranging the meetings. She's arranging for the setup and all the stuff that goes with setting up a public meeting and breaking it down. I think she's probably averaging some weeks well over her 40 hours just because there is so much. Minutes, minutes in, minutes out.
So, Mr. Ruiz, and you know, I'm not picking on you, even though you're here in the audience, but you went from, how did it happen that she goes, is this a proper procurement to be hired initially on a $10,000 contract, and we're being asked today or next week to approve going to a $60,000 full-time subcontract. Again, it's a contract. So, I mean, we're all pretty, our ears perk when we hear contract amendments on any of our bureaus. And this sounds like a person that's becoming paid in perpetuity through a contract amendment. Was that cleared with the, was that signed off on by our procurement officer?
Yes, she's actually a subcontractor of Rosenbaum and Watson.
Yeah.
She assisted with, starting in December, we were working out with DOJ the schedule for getting the COAB seated, and we were given a very tight timeline, which we didn't have city employees who could cover all of the outreach and work needed for that. So the city hired her as a short term to assist with getting the COAB seated. That was a large community. The difficult positions were the community appointed positions, which had a large community selection committee, lots of meetings, lots of outreach, which Amy was hired to coordinate that portion of it. When the COCL was actually hired, the COCL team was hired January, we still didn't have our admin position that the settlement agreement required the city to have, which became Mandy Hood's position. So Amy was filling in. She did a little extra work at the beginning of the year in getting the COAB going. And then later on, the COCL team decided that they wanted her to assist. They didn't realize how extensive the work was going to be to support the COAB. And they decided that they wanted needed additional help keeping to support the COAB through training and meetings and building the processes and the structures that they needed. And they selected to have Amy Ruiz as their subcontractor to do that work.
Rosenbaum and Watson.
Rosenbaum and Watson did, yes.
So they are. So, she is subcontracting to Rosenbaum and Watson?
Yes. All the only city, there's Mandy Hood is a full-time city employee. That's the only city employee that is directly tied with the COCL team. Brad Taylor, who is the city's mental health specialist, as part of his regular job, he does support different community neighborhood associations, community outreach, community boards, and he does support with assistance, mental health or accommodation assistance with the board. But that's not specific to the COAB. That is part of what he does for the city. So he's not even a part of this budget.
So the increase from $10,000 to $60,000 for Ms. Ruiz comes out of the pie that was allocated to Rosenbaum and Watson. As you're saying before us, there's no new money today. So this is money that was budgeted for some other function in Rosenbaum and Watson. And they're saying, no, this is a priority for us that we're willing to pay her $60,000 a year.
No, sir. We are asking for an increase to the COCL contract, which started at $240,000. And the request before you is for an increase to $383,000. The $10,000 that Deanna spoke of, which compensated Ms. Ruiz early on, was paid by the city to her. Rosenbaum and Watson decided to keep her on as a subcontractor. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the increase in the contract budget to accommodate that additional subcontractor. I'm not sure if
how long is our contract in effect with Rosenbaum and Watson?
5 years.
5 years, okay. So when you earlier described Ms. Ruiz's position as being full-time ongoing, it's only full-time, well, I mean, it's full-time ongoing perhaps as long as
yes,
the contract with Rosenbaum and Watson.
It's not full-time.
But it's a subcontract with Rosenbaum and Watson as long as Rosenbaum and Watson is employed by...
That's the understanding.
Yes. I would like to inject here. None of us are full-time. We're more than full-time. We're doing more than 8 hours work a day, and that includes Amy, and that includes Mandy. We are communicating at 9 and 10 and 11 o'clock at night in order to make sure things are ready for the next day. While, you know, I know that you hear all the time, we need more money, we need more staff. I know that's what part of your job is, to figure out whether that's true or not. I will tell you, we could use two more people right now just to get on top of what was not done in the beginning to put this board in place and to have it be secure in its ability to do the work and to have it trained and focused on being able to work together to bring forth the recommendations that we need. We're getting there. We're getting there. But at this point, the work is overwhelming. So I'm not sure how we would do without anybody that we have right now.
Thank you. Other questions?
Oh, I just wanted to add just a clarification on the increase for Tom Kristoff. I think his role was seen more as collecting data initially, and as the COCAL team has been working with the Police Bureau and the audit process and developing auditing processes for the Police Bureau, Tom's role is more doing more guidance and kind of consulting with the Police Bureau as they develop their auditing system to meet the standards in the settlement agreement. So it's a little bit different than just kind of collecting the data from them for the COCAL team. It's really helping them set up the structures of the auditing process.
So one thing you might consider when you come back in the bump is to consider whether Police Bureau money might be more appropriate to pay that part of the increase that would then free up some of the money for the office rebuild and other things.
Okay, thank you.
Good point. Good suggestion. Thank you. Other questions or points to raise or issues to raise before we thank this panel? Anything else that the three of you want to cover?
I just want to say that I think all of us, you know, when I got the call, somebody said something about 5 hours a week, and I knew that wasn't true. Because this is new and because of what we're doing and how we're doing it, it is taking so much more than any of us ever thought. Just want to point that out.
And we appreciate you stepping up to that level of effort.
I do, too. And particularly when you said you started in June, I was like, really? No, you've been here at least 6 months.
No, I started in June.
You've done 6 months' worth of work since June, and I really appreciate that. And now you've really pulled together the group. The other thing that I think we're going to want to discuss when we come back in the fall is about the amount of work that the volunteers are doing, the COAB. Mm-hmm. And they also were told 10 hours a month, as you said, and are doing more like 10 or 20 or 30 hours a week. And so I think... in my mind, this group is different from even some of the commissions that I've overseen over the past couple of years, the Design Commission that's been doing 3 8-hour meetings a month. Mm-hmm. I think we should consider whether we need to give stipends for things like child care and other expenses that the co-op volunteers are incurring above and beyond what they thought they were going to. So that's not for today. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to highlight that for my colleagues on the council, that this is a really different kind of committee.
Yes, it is.
This is not an advisory committee. Well, it is an advisory committee, but it's also connected with oversight and of establishing a new way of doing things with our police bureau. So that's planting that seed of thought for us all to think about how are we going to support these volunteers, because I certainly appreciate, as you say, they're 15 very different people. And the other thing that needs to be said is, we did it so fast because the Department of Justice settlement says we have to do it so fast. So it wasn't that we all thought that we had set up the ideal process. It was very clear to all of us that we hadn't. However, we have a mandate that we're doing the best we can to follow. And so it's nobody's fault that we're building the plane as we're flying it. Bless you. It's also an opportunity to do things differently and to explore together how are we going to make this work. And so I think that each one of us on the council also bears responsibility for that, as to thinking and, you know, challenging ourselves. What's different about a focus group? I appreciate your questions, Commissioner Saltzman. What I was thinking as you were asking your question is, how could we do things differently in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to make sure that we always are thinking about who might need to have a focus group, who is not going to respond to our survey, who is not going to come to our Neighborhood Association meeting, and yet who is integrally affected by about the topic that we're talking about. So I think it's probably going to be really cost-effective to test, to pilot this use of focus groups, which hasn't been the way that we've normally done things, to reach out to communities beyond boundaries. Maybe it's a way that we could, in a relatively short order, find out a better way to do things so that we are actually helping people as we're trying to.
Good point. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you all. Stand by in case we have other questions later on here, and we'll take public testimony.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have folks signed up to speak?
Yes.
On the ordinance?
We have five people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Dan Handelman, David Davis, and Charles Johnson.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and I'm very interested in having this discussion. It's been a while since the COAB and COCL have been brought up before council in any way, so it provides us a time to talk, as you've already been doing, both about the substance of what's been going on as well as the money being shifted around today. And I think, you know, there's still a sting out in the community that the team that was chosen is from out of town, and that some of this money, the travel money and the hotel money, are coming at the expense of if you had hired somebody local. And we have 60% of our officers don't live in the city of Portland, and we have these people who are coming in to help us improve the police bureau who are coming from outside of Portland, and they don't have to live with the consequences. It's very good that we have Ms. Haddad on the team. I think that she was a very good person to replace Justice DeMunis, because we need the local people to understand what's going on in the community. And I am concerned about the idea of putting off the question about supporting the COAB members with some kind of stipend until later on this year, because you've already lost 5 out of the original 15 members at this point. And I don't know if you're hearing from the people that each of you appointed. None of them have dropped off yet. I don't know if you have backup plan if one of them does drop off. But that's probably going to happen because there's a lot of pressure and those people are doing a lot of work. So I hope that you will figure out the policy for finding alternates as soon as possible, as well as consider the stipends. I was really appreciated the comment that this is building trust from the ground up, and there's communities that don't trust the police at all. But unfortunately, tomorrow evening, the Community Engagement and Outreach Subcommittee of the COAB is meeting in North Precinct, which to me speaks to that's something that can be done when this problem is solved. That right now, the people who are afraid of the police aren't going to go into a police precinct to have a discussion about engagement and outreach with the police. So I'm hoping that the COAB will consider moving those meetings away. And kind of related to that point, the thrust of the agreement is that the Portland police respect of a pattern and practice of using excessive force. It's particularly against people with mental illness, but the people with mental illness are just the people who are most visible in this, in the statistics and the cases that were reviewed. If there is a reduction in use of force against people with mental illness and not against everybody else, then we're not succeeding. That's not the point of the whole agreement. So I think that the survey, digging down into other communities that are vulnerable to police abuse, is very important. I'm very glad to hear Mayor Hales being supportive of that idea. The office space for the COCL was approved at this body in January, being at a community center in East Portland where a lot of the diaspora from gentrification has moved. It got moved downtown with really no discussion after it was moved first to a building that houses a police precinct or the traffic division. And a lot of the stuff like that is happening not transparently. So I'm really glad that we had this opportunity today. I'm sorry there's not more time to talk about some of these issues. But certainly having the office move again rather than build out an office downtown would probably be the better idea.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Mr. Davis?
So I'm David Davis with the Multnomah County Cop Watch. I wanted to suggest that maybe you guys should invest in giving cameras to members of the community to film the police. If you're going to offer up millions of dollars for simple citizen review boards and different accountability boards, then you might want to give cameras to a group of citizens, or even sponsor some paid cop watch groups that go around and film the police and how they deal with mentally ill people and homeless people and all kinds of different people in this community that are disproportionately affected by police abuse and corruption and misconduct. And Dan Salzman, I can't even believe that you asked that question about why there needs to be certain focus groups to deal with members of the different communities. That really shows that you don't get it, and that you are obviously not qualified to hold any position of power in this town if you can't even realize that different people are affected differently by the power structure and the police. I know it's easy for you to just be a rich white man in a place of power.
Let's stick to the subject, Mr. Davis.
This is the subject.
Mr. Davis.
Yeah, this is the subject. Don't try and interrupt me, Mayor.
Okay, Mr. Davis, let's stick to the ordinance, please.
Yes, yeah, exactly what she said. You know, you come from a place of white supremacy and a position of power, and you can't understand how the rest of us are treated. Well, you know, Charlie Hales, I remember when you were saying you're going to go sleep with the homeless, you know. I think you should still do that and do it for like a week or two with maybe not a G4S security guy to back you up. You could probably find a couple of homeless people that would make sure you're safe, or even more safe than your G4S security guys. But I suggest that Dan Salzman, that you go out and sleep in the streets too, and every one of you guys, and then you might have some perspective. Go do a week in the streets in the dead of winter, and you know, and maybe even change your appearance so you get harassed by the police. So you know, I know they have people in Hollywood that could make you look like a completely different person. Then you might gain some perspective. You know,
Mr. Johnson, you're next.
Good morning, Commissioners. Good afternoon. It's not my usual time. I think for the issue Commissioner Salzman raised, we have Jewish community centers. We have the Q Center. Cascadia, the Mental Health Association of Portland, NAMI, are something not the same as those. So within the Black community, within the gay community, people need to be encouraged to develop connections with people who are experiencing mental illness, and help those people then to have a sense of security where they can relate to the COBE, where they can get on this important process of making sure the Portland police don't shoot and kill them. So obviously, you know, we could go down a rabbit hole of infinite focus groups, but I think that when we look at just some core things, way that the people in the Black community, within the LGBTQ community, can engage with their neighbors who may have mental health issues, and let them know, hey, there's this experience that we're going through in Portland of building this COCO and COAB. If you feel like you can engage and identify as a person with having experience with mental illness, you can help save lives. So, you know, I think in addition to this, we should look at some better engagement with NAMI, Mental Health Association, Cascade Behavioral Health, to get direct involvement, but there's still a need to reach people in the communities that they identify with. At first,